Now, last Sunday we looked at two people, Simeon and Anna, and as Lam was sharing, he was saying, Simeon is becoming a hero. He is such a wonderful man. And I love the fact that Art and Sarah called their first son Simeon. Simeon was a man who realized the reality of the time in which he was living. Russell, if you could put up the... I think I showed this slide, you know, and actually it captured for me something that I never realized about Simeon. Of course, he went into the temple regularly to pray. And just like Jesus went there to pray, what did he find? People exchanging money and just the same thing Jesus found. And he was disturbed inside. He was troubled. And today we are experiencing these things. We find ourselves troubled because we find not the things that God wants in his house or even in the world in which we live. And they make us feel troubled. They ought to make us feel troubled. David Wilkerson, who's now in heaven, preached a wonderful sermon about anguish, the call to anguish. In fact, he said, there is no true work of God without a call to anguish first, without people feeling the burden of the need in which they are living. And Simeon felt it. And so as he felt it, he realized he couldn't fix it. But he believed God could fix it. And so the next slide, I think, Russell, is you know, he gave himself to pray. And he went into that temple to pray. In the midst of all the wickedness, he went to pray and seek God. And God laid on his heart as he sought God, he was going to see the salvation that Simeon was longing for before he died. He didn't know what form it was going to come in, whether it would be some great preacher or whatever. It's not clear that he was told that. But we know that when Mary and Joseph brought Jesus as a little baby into that temple for the Jewish rites of dedication and purification, the time of his circumcision, Simeon, so caught up with God, you see, so connecting with God in the midst of the wickedness, could see, this is it. And you see, other people couldn't see it. But he could see it because he was so connecting with God in his prayers, in his focus, that he could see, this is it. This baby is God himself come down to bring salvation. And he was just released. Oh, Lord, now let thy servant depart in peace, for my eyes have seen your salvation. And, of course, Anna was in the same position. She had dedicated herself in fasting and prayer, and she was connecting with God, and she saw the same thing. Other people around her did not see it. But she saw it and he saw it. Now, today, we're looking at men. And I don't want to call them three wise men because actually the Bible does not say three wise men. It says magi from the East. And in fact, in the Eastern churches, so the Orthodox churches, there's a tradition that there were 12 magi. Now, that's speculation too. But it's likely that there were actually more than three. And these men were living in the east, and the east of Jerusalem, the east of Israel. It's most likely, and of course it is speculation because we're not told exactly, but it's most likely that these men, these wise men, were living in Persia. Why Persia? Because if we think through the influence of the Jewish people in the known world of the time, you see, we go back 600 years when the exile of the Jewish people from Israel, taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon. And of course, with them we had Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. We know the stories there. Taken captive with a whole lot of other Jewish people into the Babylonian Empire, which eventually was taken over by the Persians. And we know that Daniel himself was in the Persian court. He was one of the Magi. See? Daniel was one of the Magi. He was one of the wise men of the council of the Persian court. Remember Darius. Darius loved him because he had wisdom. And of course, Daniel's witness in his life was powerful. You know, the other, well, here we are, some wise men looking out over the Persian capital, perhaps, of Susa. It was prosperous. It was the most prosperous place possibly on earth at the time. So there was everything you could want as far as the world is concerned. Like Melbourne. Like Sydney. Like the cities of Australia. Why people have come to this country. Many people have come here because of the things this world can offer them. Has all the comforts, all of the pleasures, all of the delights the world can bring. Here they are in Susa. In fact, if you've seen the film Esther and the King, is that the story, Esther and the King, the modern one? Sorry?
One Night.
Oh, One Night with the King, that's right. There's some very grand sort of illustrations of what the Persian kingdom was like. And these men, these magi, these wise men living in this kingdom were counselors to the rulers. That's why you have people like Darius seeking counsel from his magi, his wise men. Now, the influence of the Jewish people on that community was actually profound. And this we know from the scriptures. We know the influence of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We know that Nebuchadnezzar in the Babylonian kingdom had so been influenced by them that he called all of his people to acknowledge the God of these men, the God of Israel. And then we have, of course, with Esther and Xerxes and the whole story of Mordecai and Esther in the Persian kingdom. And in the end, of course, with Haman being hanged on a gallows and the king declaring the blessing over the Jewish people, the influence of Jewish life, the God of Israel, impacted these communities. Now, put yourself in the position of a magi, even a secular magi, who realizes that there has been great wisdom in the man of Daniel, in these people. You would be most likely inclined to seek out where they got this wisdom from. Perhaps you would even read what Daniel wrote. And here you have then people from the East, magi, why in the end, ask yourself the question, why in the end do these counselors in a royal setting, in a city that has everything the world could offer, why do they travel 1,500 kilometres or more to the west to seek out a little baby in a house in Bethlehem? Are they happy with the world in which they're living? Are they content that they have everything they need? I don't think so. I think these men realize that despite all of the luxuries and all of the things the world can offer them, something is missing. Something vital is missing. There's something missing. And, you know, it's interesting, the scholars tell us that Balaam, who was one of the prophets, of course, in the Old Testament, Balaam came from the Persian region, from Pethor on the Euphrates River. And Balaam spoke in the book of Numbers, we know, that a star would come out of Jacob. Oh. Numbers 24, verse 17. Now, if you're one of these counsel, one of these magi in that situation, you are seeking out truth from all sorts of sources. And it's not beyond belief that these men had considered some of these statements that had been made, some of these writings that had been written down as they searched for meaning and purpose in their own community. And as they found in their hearts great trouble, as I trust some of you are feeling about our own city, about our own community, they were finding great burden of the corruption that had entered the world. And I think there's a slide next. Is there one next? A star appears. Now, it's difficult for scholars, for people to actually... What is this star? Is it some astronomical coincidence, providential? Is it actually a supernatural sign from God that's put in the sky? There are some very unusual characteristics of this star. Later on, we're going to see how the scriptures tell us this star moves to stand over the very place where Jesus is. Sounds like a very interesting star to me. And some scholars believe more, this star is in fact more like the pillar of fire that led the Israelites in the wilderness. This is a supernatural work of God taking place to lead men whose hearts are turning towards him to the very thing that will reveal to them God's purpose of salvation for the whole world, including their own community. Now, I want to just share with you something else about Susa. This is the place where the Jews had significant influence. The significance of Susa to the Jewish people was such that the Talmud... Now, the Talmud is second to the Old Testament in the Jewish faith. The Talmud is its main source of teaching, other than the scriptures, for Jewish religious law and Jewish religious theology. And it says, a picture, this is in the Talmud, a picture of Susa, the capital of the Persian kings, should be carved on the eastern gate of the temple in Jerusalem. Many scholars say this was intended in memory of the good relations with Persia. So you can see the influence of the Jewish people in this eastern territory, this eastern nation, and how the Magi could be influenced by Jewish heritage and history and even prophetic writings, so that they are looking now for this star, as even Balaam had declared in his prophetic statement in Numbers 24:17. And it appears in the sky to them. And it's out of Judah. So they recognize this is where they need to head, towards Judah. Now, the journey that they take, I think the next slide might show the journey that, well, these men are looking up and considering where they're going to go. And then the journey. Okay, there's Susa, right over there in the east. And in order to get to Judah in the west, this is a very significant journey. They weren't going to do it in a few days. It was going to be months to travel all the way there, leave behind their homes and everything else. It's so like Abraham. It is so like Abraham. These men leave everything behind to go to a place they don't actually know yet exactly where they're going, except to Judah, towards the west. But of course, the star is going to lead them. God is going to lead them as he led Abraham. And these men are going to trust God to lead them and follow this star. And it's around 1,500 kilometres that they're going to travel. Well, you don't do that just without taking careful consideration of what you're doing. It's a journey of significant sacrifice, a demonstration of faith and devotion to this thing that God has appeared to them about. And they surrender themselves completely to God. Now, if God was to call you today to surrender everything you have, like he said to Abraham, leave all your family, all the things you have, come, follow me. Come, I want to show you something extraordinary. I want to do extraordinary things in your life. And these men, here we are in Melbourne today in 2025, and we are remembering these Magi. And their step of faith has been preached throughout the world for over 2,000 years. It's interesting, you know, the Bible says this: the Lord looks down from heaven. This is Psalm 14, verse 2, on the children of man. And that's all children. It doesn't matter what background you come from. You could be from Persia. You might be a Muslim. You might be a Hindu. You might be a Buddhist. You might be anything. The Lord looks down from heaven on the sons of man to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God, who are genuinely seeking God. Not who are caught up in some religion, but who are seeking God. He looks down and he sees these ones who are genuinely seeking God. And for you in your life today, God is looking. Are you seeking God, really seeking? Not just turning up to church, but are you seeking God? And all you want is him. Well, the wise men were guided as they sought after God. God appeared in a miraculous sign in the sky, the Star of Bethlehem. And as I said before, there's a lot of conjecture about what this star actually was or is. Was it an astronomical element, a planet, a star, or is it a sign that God placed in view of the wise men because they were seeking him? Now, the Magi travel all this 1,500 kilometres. They came past cities like Babylon. They came through desert wastes. They came through all kinds of challenging places. There were potential robbers on the way. These travel routes were renowned for bandits who would raid people carrying anything of wealth. It was dangerous. But this star, I think the next one shows that this light kept leading them forward, kept drawing them as they kept seeking God. And they come eventually to Jerusalem. You can show, I think there's a, yeah, through the mountainous region, and they come to Jerusalem, the next one. Now, can you imagine Jerusalem receives these magi from the east. You go to the next one, Russell. No, that's going backwards, I think. No, there's one of them arriving in the city, I think. It's that text there in Matthew 2:3 is worth keeping in your mind as you see a picture of these men coming. King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone. Everyone in Jerusalem was disturbed by the arrival of these magi from the east. Something is going on here. Something extraordinary is happening. Something unusual. Oh, it's not there, is it? Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, don't worry. You can imagine these men arriving perhaps on their camels through the gates of Jerusalem. There's one of them arriving, but I think there's another one of them entering the city. And people are looking and thinking, who are these guys, you know? What do they come for? And then they come to Herod, the king, and ask him, where is this king of the Jews, this newborn child to be king of the Jews? And of course Herod, who was a almost psychotic ruler there in Israel, so concerned about anyone who would rival his power, he killed his own family. And he hears about the arrival of someone born to be king of the Jews. He was disturbed, but so was the whole city. I think we're jumping all over the place here, but anyway, don't worry. Just leave it on that one, that's fine. The whole city is disturbed. Do you know, when people genuinely follow God, they cause a disturbance. They cause a disturbance. Things are not, just as nice and easy and just as they were. People following God are actually connected to heaven, and they are causing a disturbance. Jesus was certainly doing that when he was on earth, wasn't he? You know, going into the temple and overthrowing the money changers, challenging the Pharisees. When we truly walk with God, we cause a disturbance. You know, we have had a young woman in our city, in this city of Melbourne, who has shaken the political climate of our state. One young woman who's been courageous enough to follow God, irrespective of what other people thought of her. And I thought at one time, maybe, Maury, you should just forgive John Pesutto and, you know, leave this court case. But her pursuit of justice and truth has shaken the foundations. People who do this sort of thing cause disturbances, and they easily lead us to judge them wrongly. Thankfully, I know Moira's heart. She's an absolute gem, this lady. She's like an Esther in her own time. Courageous, and yet full of the love of God. I don't know whether you saw her response when interviewers after the disturbance in the Liberal Party, and they were looking for her to, you know, have a go at John Pesutto. And the grace and forgiveness in her voice and her conversation with the press was beautiful. It was godly. God is doing things right here in our city, right now. I hope you're in touch with it. You'll only be in touch if you are seeking God yourself, like Simeon and Anna. The world hasn't captured you and ruling your activities, your thoughts, your affections. Your heart is toward God. You are disturbed at the state of the society in which we are living today. And you believe like the wise men, like Simeon and Anna, that God can change it. That God, nothing is impossible for him. He can turn Victoria upside down. But he needs a people who believe he can do it. And these magi from the east believed God was leading them. And as you'll see at the end of this story, the remarkable transformation in their lives as a result of finding God, finding him. And this is what all of us need to do. We need to find him. We need to experience him. We need to know we have encountered him personally, like Simeon, like Anna, and like these men. Because we are living in evil days, friends. And this evil has almost unsurpassed distractions in our time to keep us from seeking God. Have you got one of these devices? These devices are incredibly invasive. Time-consuming, occupying, attention-giving, focusing, to so take hold of our thinking, there's no time to seek God. And the flooding of information highways. We are living in a day when information is pouring forth onto the earth as never before. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil is being ravenously eaten up by all of us. These highways, these contemporary society avenues that Satan himself is very happy to support and promote, send out news and sport and gossip and games and gambling and pornography and every conceivable mode of dissipation in the most incredible measure, flooding our whole community. It's consuming so much of our time and attention. Now, I want you to be absolutely honest with yourself today. Here we are, sitting here before God. Ask yourself the question, and this, I'm asking myself the question too, because I'm just as easily caught up by these things. I'm not speaking as one who doesn't know the reality of being distracted and drawn over into things that, oh, Michael, what are you doing? We are living in a desperate time. You need to seek God. Ask yourself this question: how much time do I actually spend seeking God? How much time each day, each week, each month, each year, how much do I actually spend seeking God? Now, you've actually spent some time today. You've come to church. But I'm asking you the question in your personal life, like Simeon, like Anna, like these magi, if you like, because I believe these magi were seeking God. They were seeking for answers to the troubles of their time. And God saw from heaven, as we read from Psalm 14, these ones seeking God. And he gave them a sign to lead them to the very place where they would see what God was doing. Not what they could do, but what God is doing and will do. And he uses these men, of course, because we have their testimony today. How much time do I actually spend seeking God? Now, I ask the question because Jesus told his disciples that in the end times, and I believe we're living in the end times, we actually have been living in the end times since Jesus left, but we are certainly seeing and witnessing on earth the very things Jesus spoke about would lead to his return. And he said there would be many things that would seek to deceive the followers of Jesus in these times, so that they become lost and unable to discern the spiritual influences that impact their lives. I was talking to some dear Nigerian folk yesterday, and I said to them, oh, you know, you need to speak up as Africans, because our nation treats witchcraft as entertainment. And they were shocked that we are doing this. Witchcraft and magic treated as entertainment. Pouring out the demons. And Jesus said, many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. Be careful you're not led astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, is lawlessness being increased? Have a look at Victoria. What is the government? They don't have an answer for the lawlessness that is breaking out in the community. And this is not just here, it's happening all over the world. The love of many will grow cold. Why is that? Because love comes from God. You don't contain it and keep it just, you know, in a nice little bottle. Love comes from God. God is love. If you seek God, he will fill you with his love. He will continue to fill you with his spirit, and his spirit produces love. But that's why I go back to the question. Ask yourself honestly the question, how much time do I honestly spend seeking God myself? And Jesus said, therefore, stay awake. And I can see this morning, my wife told me she might be falling asleep in my message. She's had a busy time, but stay awake. Now, this is not just awake physically, this is awake spiritually. Are you awake spiritually? You can be wide awake physically and completely disconnected from what's going on. There were so many hundreds of people in the temple when Jesus was brought in by Joseph and Mary, and they were asleep. But Simeon and Anna were not asleep. They were awake in the spirit to what God was doing. And Jesus said, therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. And he mentions this in Luke's Gospel, chapter 21, 34 to 36. But watch yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with dissipation. Dissipation. Now, I love, somebody gave a children's talk some years ago, and they tried to, well, they beautifully actually illustrated to children what dissipation is. They brought in one of those hand sprays, you know, those hand sprays that you sort of cool off in the hot summer, or you spray your indoor plants with, and they squeezed it tight, and it, you know, it dispersed the water everywhere, and then they made it into that little water pistol, you know. Dissipation is when the water goes everywhere. And the water pistol is what God wants in us. He wants us focused, not dissipated. And there are so many things that are attracting our attention, occupying our thoughts, grabbing our time and energies, that we become dissipated. And the power of God in us just slowly fades away. And this is what Jesus is talking about. Watch yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness. There's a lot of drinking and stuff, even in the Christian community. And cares of this life, the many cares of this life. All of the affairs of this life, the properties we own, the cars we have, everything takes so much time. There's no time to seek God. Be careful, says Jesus. And in the dictionary, the word dissipation is described like this: overindulgence in sensual pleasures, squandering of money, energy and resources, or the loss of energy through its conversion into heat. And I think there's a lot of loss of energy spiritually for heat that disappears into nothing. We are living in days when people are calling evil good and good evil. Our world, the modern Western world that we're living in, as I talked to my Nigerian friends yesterday, has been dominated by the doctrines of Hollywood. The doctrines of Hollywood. Do you know the fires that have been in LA? David Wilkerson saw these fires when he was alive. God's judgment coming upon where wickedness has been poured forth over the earth. What are the doctrines of Hollywood? Well, they're this. Sex is to be engaged in for pleasure, not childbearing, and marriage enriching. It's just to be engaged for pleasure. That sex is available on demand through media, films, online pleasures. Sex outside marriage is to be encouraged and embraced. These are the doctrines of Hollywood. That the roles of men and women are interchangeable, and therefore homosexuality and transgender behaviour is natural. That witchcraft and magic is entertainment. That violence is glorified. Swearing is normalised, and there's no such thing as holiness. These are the doctrines that are pouring out over people's lives. Now, of course, these doctrines of Hollywood and filmmaking industries of our world have promoted them. Of course, they're doctrines that are in the hearts of sinful men and women who are under Satan's rule. And Satan has used these avenues of communication to pollute the minds of men, women and children all over the world. And some of our own thinking is impacted by these doctrines. And we need God to release us from every influence of this kind of thinking. Paul says in Romans 12, verse 1 and 2, be renewed in the spirit of your mind. And this comes as you seek God in his word, as you allow his word to fill you with his thoughts. Now, these magi in the East there, with the influence of the Jews, with Daniel's writings, with Balaam's, were they not searching out these scriptures, these truths, and finding in them God was speaking to them? Of course, I don't know exactly this was happening, but this is certainly possible. And their minds are being influenced by God's thoughts so that they are open for God to lead them, as he did. It's very interesting that the last book of the Bible tells us, fallen is Babylon the Great. This world in which we live, with all its magnificence, with all its claims of pleasure and delight, and it's actually fallen and it's coming down. And what we see happening in LA is a sign of God's judgment upon these things. Of course, there are people impacted by that. It doesn't mean we don't show mercy and compassion for those who've lost property and everything else. But we need to realise that God is finally the judge of all men. Babylon the Great. And what has she become? She's become a dwelling place for demons. Just like Lamb was telling us this morning. Demonic powers are controlling people's minds and thoughts. They're coming through the television. They're coming through the cinemas. They're coming through all kinds of influences. And the promotion of luxury and pleasure. That's what was happening there in Persia. There when these magi were living in all the luxury of the world. But they were troubled in their heart. They realized something vital was missing. The book of Revelation in chapter 18 tells us she's become a dwelling place for demons, a haunt for every unclean spirit. All nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her. And God then says, come out of her, my people. come out of her, lest you share in her plagues. In other words, God is going to judge these things, and he's calling his own people out to protect them. These magi were being called out of Persia with all of its luxury, with all the things that we hear from Hollywood, there spiritually were there in Persia. Called out, leave it all behind. Go to a little town called Bethlehem in Judah, and you will find my solution to this problem. The two accounts we've had over the last two Sundays are clear examples of people who truly make connection with God and are able to recognize what he is doing in their days. Simeon and Anna and the Magi are illustrations to us of the importance of seeking God. And this seeking is very real. It's very sincere. It's very focused. And ends with finding what the people are seeking. The promises of God are clear. Jesus said, seek and you will find. But he also said this, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. He didn't say the treasure was just lying on the ground for you to go and pick up. He said it's hidden in a field. You've got to seek it out. The response of seeking is also not unrelated to the grace of God in giving us clues or providing messengers who tell us that God can be found. You see, these magi had the history of a man like Daniel who found God, didn't he? Who experienced God. And have you had people in your life who have shared with you accounts of their encounters with God, of God meeting them? You have been blessed with the grace of God to stir your heart to seek God yourself. That is the grace. If he has sent someone to you or alongside you or in your experience of life who is telling you about this wonderful God, he's actually calling you to seek him. Daniel, Shadrach, Esther, Mordecai and other faithful Jews bore witness to this living God in their exile in Babylon and then in Persia. And this is God's way of calling us to himself. But the question you have to ask yourself is, will I? Will I seek God? How do you know that you found God? This is a really good question to ask. How do you know that you found him? Well, I'll tell you this. And this is what this passage shows us too. When you find God, you can never be the same afterwards. You will never meet with God and stay as you are, ever. In the story today, we read the Magi went away from Jesus a different route, didn't they? In a dream, they were warned not to return to Herod. They departed their own country another way. They went a completely different way, guided by God himself. And you will never come to Jesus and leave him the same way you came. This is a constant message in the Bible, a very clear and consistent principle of the New Testament, which stated simply is no one goes away from Jesus Christ unchanged. No one. So if you're not changed, then perhaps you haven't really met him. You see, let me just give you some illustrations. No one encounters him and leaves that encounter in the same condition that they began it. The blind man came away seeing. The deaf man came away hearing. The lame left walking. Lepers went away cleansed. The poor had the good news proclaimed to them. Those without a shepherd gained a shepherd. Those without a teacher gained a teacher. Those who were sick got well. Those who were dead were raised to life. Sadly, too, there were some who went away changed for the worse. You will never meet Jesus and not be changed, but you can get worse from meeting him. The rich young man went away sad, for his possessions were many. And though hearing the call, he would not embrace it. He was being called like the Magi in the East to leave everything and follow Jesus. The Pharisees and other unbelievers went away mad. They were cross. They were angry. So mad that they plotted to kill Jesus. And these are the two things that will happen. You will either meet Jesus and he'll change you, or you'll get angry. You'll get against him. Because he comes into the world to transform us, to change us. You know, today we read from Amos. And Amos was a prophet who wrote before the exile. And he told the people of Israel, as we read this morning, God says, the Lord, the house, says to the house of Israel, seek me and live. Isn't it? It's a simple instruction, isn't it? Seek the God of Israel and live. And this is the message for you and me today. If you seek the God of Israel, the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, you will live. He will transform you with new life. He will continually give you life. In fact, he will raise you from the dead. You will live. Seek me, says God to the people of Israel, and live. Do not seek Bethel. Do not seek Gilgal. Do not seek Beersheba. Why is he saying this? Because, you know, God had been experienced in Bethel before. God had been experienced in Gilgal before. God had been experienced in Beersheba before. We can go back and remember times when God has met us in the past, or even other people, and go back and feel kind of comfortable in those settings. People go to great cathedrals in Europe and they feel a sense, well, you know, God has been at work here. We went to a cathedral and it was full of dead people. Actually, dead, you know, sculptures of people laid. It was like a mausoleum. We went to St. Peter's in Rome, where a cleaner was standing on top of a glass box where there was a dead pope in it. He was standing on top cleaning, standing on top of the pope, the dead pope. And I felt Jesus say, do not seek the living among the dead. This passage is telling us, seek God today, for now. He's a living God. He's not a God who wants you to dwell on the things of the past. He wants to do new things today in your life. Seek me and live, he says. Do not enter Gilgal or cross over to Beersheba. Seek the Lord and live. This is what these Magi did. They sought the Lord, the God of Israel, and he led them to his son, the Lord Jesus, and they went away leaping with joy. In fact, when they met Jesus, what did they do? They fell down and worshipped a baby. Now, isn't that a bit strange? But they knew who he was. They knew what they had met, like Simeon and Anna. They knew this was God himself. And if you seek the living God, you will find him and he will change your life. Are you willing to be changed? Are you ready for God to do new things? To speak to you and say, leave all this. Come. follow me.